Let's go. Welcome back to Bitcoin Center.
Episode 26.
What's up, Cedric?
What's up, Paul?
Not much, man. What are you doing over there?
I'm looking at what tweets I want to talk about this week. I want to read this one. This is from Shanaka 86.
Shanaka
Twain. Breaking. The silent kill switch inside your Bitcoin ETF. They told you it was safe. They told you it was secure. They never told you about the clause that lets them unplug the protocol. This is not a market prediction. This is a structural revelation. The veto. The SEC filings are clear. BlackRock, Fidelity, and other ETF sponsors hold good faith discretion to decide which Bitcoin chain is the valid one in the event of a fork. Your sovereign upgrade, it can be orphaned, stranded, vetoed into irrelevance by a compliance officer. The concentration. Right now, ETF custodians control 1.3 million Bitcoin. That is 6.8% of the entire circulating supply. A single company, Coinbase, holds 81% of that. Projections show this concentration reaching 15 to 20% by 2030. At that threshold, their veto power becomes absolute. The precedent. History is not kind to the stranded. The Ethereum DAO fork in 2016 orphaned the original chain, ETC, leaving 16 to 20% of nodes behind. The Bitcoin Cash forks in 2017 and 2018 did the same, isolating 17% of participants. These were voluntary splits. An ETF veto is an involuntary excision. The future, frozen. This is not about price. This is about protocol ossification. Upgrades for privacy, scalability, or post-quantum security can be blocked by to satisfy regulatory compliance. The innovative heart of Bitcoin risks being frozen at a 2017 level of technology. We are witnessing the great speciation, a compliant, sanitized BlackRock Bitcoin and a sovereign, purist, original Bitcoin. Your fungible asset may soon become two. The greatest paradox in financial history is unfolding. The decentralized asset is being centrally captured through its own investment vehicles. The ultimate trade is no longer long or short. It is self-custody versus controlled custodial capture. The clock is ticking. The concentration is growing. That is the red pill. Swallow it. What to watch next? Custody concentration breaching 10%.
Well said.
Yeah. That's interesting.
I like that she or he or they or whatever they are did that so thoroughly. I mean, we've all kind of said that right from the beginning, right? That was the risk of the ETF.
Yeah. Well, do you think it's a big risk?
BlackRock does that to every security on Wall Street that they're on the board of, right? And they hold the most of the shares. They vote the proxies for all the shareholders. They control, they have not control, but big sway over that company. Why would they not want that over Bitcoin?
Yeah. Well, I mean, someone like Rockstar Dev, he was on my show and he was saying, you know, it's giant honeypot. You concentrate all this Bitcoin. One day it gets hacked, taken. And it's all unleashed in a way. When it gets rinsed and distributed again, maybe, and decentralized. But I think...
I mean, the only pushback I have against that is that I do believe there's a general awakening of humanity to a decentralized lifestyle. Moving away from... You take care of me, daddy, to I'm going to take care of myself because nobody else got my back. If anybody knows this better than anyone, it's the millennials, right? They just got dumped a pile of shit. So if they're not going to wake up to the fact that they need to be sovereign, they need to be decentralized, then this is the future that we have. And we've given up. But I think many people, starting with Gen X especially, and then going into millennials and our kids, the Gen Zs that are coming up now, they want a decentralized future. They don't trust centralized government control. So I think even though she's accurate and it's well said and it's a relevant threat, I'm hopeful that humanity is moving away from that mindset.
Yeah. The hard forks and the soft forks, that conversation will come up, I think, during the show. I want to read another tweet from Rob Wallace. Since Trump got elected last November and Bitcoin ran from 60K to 100K, Bitcoin has been shaking out the weak and testing the patience of the strong. For months, OGs holding thousands of Bitcoin have been selling, happy to have held until the 100K milestone and convinced we were near the top of the four-year cycle. Over 5.5 million Bitcoin, about 27.5% of the 19.9 million Bitcoin in circulation.
Wait, how many? How many?
Over 5.5 million Bitcoin, about 27.5% of the 19.9.
Have been sold when?
Have moved.
Oh, moved, not
at least once as prices at prices above 100K.
Okay, moved is different than sold, but
sure.
That's I think not it's the, interpreted I mean, when here. I, when as, I, yeah, when I re, when I researched what was sold, it's equivalent to what was being sold in previous cycles, but go on.
These coins are moving out of the hands of individual whales and into the hands of convicted hodlers, institutions, and the wealth they represent. This rotation has helped Bitcoin build one of the strongest bases in history, sitting just a few percentage points from all-time highs while Twitter cries boredom. The bears made one final stand on October 10th, that violent flash crash that wiped out more leverage in a single day than the first 4 months of the year combined. It was the bear's last shot, and they fired it. Yet here we stand at 115,000. Right now, Bitcoin sits in a position that is statistically rare. The largest positioning rinse in crypto's history has collided with a macro Goldilocks backdrop. The Trump Z trade deal framework is finally taking shape after 6 months of tension. Over the weekend in Malaysia, both sides confirmed major progress. Bessent said the agreement would spare China from 100% tariffs, while China's rare earth export ban will be delayed for at least a year, giving the West a crucial window to rebuild supply chains. At the same time, the Fed is preparing to end quantitative tightening while signaling they will cut rates into a market already at all-time highs. Trillions of dollars are still sitting in money market funds waiting to move back into risk. All of it adds up to one thing. The world's biggest markets are turning the corner. The cloud of uncertainty that has hung over Bitcoin all year is finally lifting. And as Asia opened last night, we saw it unfold in real time. Gold is falling down over 2.5% overnight and 8% since it peaked last Tuesday. Bitcoin is up 6% and October is officially in the green. The rotation is on. The torch is being passed. When gold toppled in 2020, Bitcoin launched within 2 months, rising more than 400% in the following half year. We could be setting up for a similar story now. Bitcoin is the next man up. This could be the moment the world realizes that the four-year cycle is a thing of the past. The greatest opportunities in Bitcoin do not come when it is cheap. They come when the last bear gives up and the last skeptic runs out of excuses. This is the setup that only comes around once every 4 years. Bitcoin's time to launch is here.
I mean, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if that was that convincing. Especially with sort of the
referring to 2020, that was a totally different setup. A lot of well said stuff there, but I don't necessarily agree.
Yeah, we'll see. Do you think? Do you think markets are or M2 is easing? Is getting more? Is there more liquidity coming into the system?
It seems to me like it's still a battle, right? There's, I think there's obviously going to be more liquidity with lower interest rates. I think, if we lose the fear of, massive tariffs on these crucial metals and minerals, and I think that'll be a win also. But at the same time, there's a macro backdrop. If you look at, just the overall business cycle, that's getting more and more negative.
Yeah, right? The layoffs
and AI's innovation reducing employment or reducing future hiring. So there's a lot of cross currents. I still think there's more upside left in Bitcoin. Besides all of that, but I have a hard time seeing this thing go to the 444K or a million or 800 or 750.
But it could go to 70K in the next week too.
Yeah,
I think that's very possible, yeah. And that could really blow everyone's minds. Well, and then that could be
what we need
to just flush out, because it seems like there's still a lot of speculation in the system.
Well, what I was going to say is that you might need some sort of business cycle panic before you get massive liquidity injections by the United States, right? All I know is that the path we're going is much higher Bitcoin and much higher gold, but Bitcoin is going to be far greater performance than gold just out of the scarcity factor.
Yeah.
And the adoption factor. So if you focus on where we're going and not the path we take to get there, you're going to be fine. And you're going to just take any downturn, any major catastrophes as opportunities to accumulate more.
All right.
That's the...
Stay humble and stack sats.
Yeah, man.
Let's fucking go. All right. This is Bitcoin Center number 26, brought to you by Bite Federal. Go bank yourself, point of sale, crypto wallet, and the Bitcoin ATMs. Make sure you buy spot Bitcoin at that Bitcoin ATM and put it in self-custody and stamp your seed phrase. You could use Microseed. Go to microseed.io. You could use Code Matrix. Let's get into it.
Let's do it. Let's be real, right? Praising Telegram for launching a Bitcoin wallet. I've always felt like Vitalik.
Bitcoin, this digital currency that's out there that people say, oh, it might be the next big thing. What do you think?
I think it's rat poison.
Bitcoin. You never heard of them a few weeks ago. Now everybody's talking about them. But is it a currency?
I don't know. Or is it more like a stock? Or is it a tulip bulb?
Or is
whatever
it just
debate that.
Stupid.
To me, it smells like Ponzi scheme and the greater fool theory, right?
You do like 5 minutes of freaking research.
Well, good. Thanks for coming to my set talk.
Yes.
Don't buy Bitcoin.
Oh, man, I was getting that wrong. All right.
Bitcoin's recent rally. Do you agree? Is crypto finally dead? Go to the next one.
Matter of fact, they're kind of in the Ethernet. What are they?
There's some rumors that it's this Japanese guy, but they're saying no, that he's a fake name. It was a pseudonym.
You're literally putting real money onto a system that we don't even know who created it.
It will come to a bad ending.
Is this the most exciting bull run ever?
Not for me. No, it's not.
Welcome to Bitcoin Center, the fast-paced show where the debate is the story.
I had no idea this was the first topic. Are Bitcoin's biggest hodlers trading self-sovereignty for Wall Street convenience as over 3 billion of Bitcoin moves into BlackRock's ETF tax-free?
Yeah. So when I looked at this, right, you have to understand that these in-kind conversions where you've got Bitcoiners coin in exchange for ETF shares, it can go the other way as well, right? So it's still up to the Bitcoin community to preach about self-custody and the value of self-custody. I don't think there's going to be anything greater than a Wall Street meltdown to convince people of self-custody.
Mm.
Just like we've experienced all the crypto meltdowns.
Yeah.
And we've yanked our coins into self-custody. I think Wall Street's going to have to learn that lesson.
Do you mean Main Street investing in,
sure,
Wall Street?
No. These are institutions that are able to do this. Individuals are just screwed. If you're in the ETF, you can't take self-custody of Bitcoin in the ETF. These are for institutional buyers only. The reason why they want to do it, right, is that it's cheaper and easier to get margin on your Bitcoin than it is to get a collateralized loan against Bitcoin, right? You're going to get a collateralized loan at 8, 10% maybe, right, if you're an institution, where you're going to get margin at like, what, 3, 4%, something silly like that, right? So I think for them, it makes sense. Hopefully, they believe in self-custody, and when the stuff hits the fan, hopefully they're yanking their coins and going into self-custody as well. So,
yeah.
I mean, that is the beauty of Bitcoin, the fact that you can hold it sovereignly, and that is unlike any other asset we have. So that and other than gold in your backyard, right? So, yeah, that's my take on it. It's, 30,000 coins, they say, roughly. And IBIT, not the entire ETF industry, but holds about 3.8% of the coins of the 21 million.
Yeah. Well, these OGs, a lot of them were some of the most radical thinkers around separate money from state.
Yeah.
You know, but
we don't know they're OGs.
We don't know that.
We don't know that. No. I think they're institutional holders that have been accumulating Bitcoin. And this is a way for them to get more leverage.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the next one here.
All right. Trump pardons CZ. A sitting U.S. president just pardoned the Binance co-founder. Does Trump freeing Binance's CZ raise a red flag? I mean, was CZ still in jail? He was
free. No, he was out of jail, but he sort of I think had a record, and so we couldn't. This kind of opens the gate for him to officially resume business with Binance here in the U.S.
Got it.
Well, it was when he went to jail, he had to appoint, you know, sort of a representative to take his role over. And so, I mean, in May, before he got the pardon, they accepted about, I think, $2 billion in Trump's stablecoin as payment, you know, or as an equity investment. So they were already sort of paving the way and doing pre-negotiations. The company was, without CZ officially being there and being a part of it. What I find interesting about this, one, I didn't realize that CZ subjected himself to U.S. authority and went to prison here. I didn't realize he was, I thought he would never land on American soil to be in, taken.
Like it was like an agreement, though, for like
a short period of time.
Sentence or something like that?
Sure.
It was short.
I think it was like a little longer than 2 months. I think it was several months, maybe 4 months or something like that. They also paid a $4.3 billion penalty. That was, I mean, so just think about how profitable they are. But on the other side of this, you know, the Biden administration came at them for, you know, not maintaining an effective anti-money laundering program, which, you know, that's really vague in the sense that, like, so they're running a program. It's just not effective.
Yeah.
Define effective. Who gets to judge that? Who gets to judge?
Like the president of the CEO of HSBC never went to prison for not running a fucking
effective anti-money or JP Morgan when Madoff
they always throw some underling in jail.
Yeah, and with Madoff and all these sort of crimes. So it does seem maybe that it wasn't fair. I don't know. Sure. I'm not a CZ I'm not a crypto fan, but I think CZ is a really interesting character. But he pledged to make America the capital of crypto. Which is, I think, this is interesting because there was always rumors that, you know, Binance is a sort of a Chinese front. Now he was born in, I think, Canada, sort of like Vitalik, but Vitalik being Russian, lineage.
Canada is an easy
sort of place to embed someone.
No, from what I understand, it's an easy place to land if you're coming from China.
Sure. Was he planted there by China? Who knows? But it's interesting. They're going to let Binance go crazy here in the States.
He couldn't build what he's building in China. Yeah. So he had to leave, right?
Yeah. So, but Trump, though, you know, before we move on, he pardoned the three co-founders of BitMEX. And, you know, he pardoned Ross and, you know, a few, and the 1,500 people. He used the pardon power in his second term early as opposed to most presidents using late. I don't know. Let's move on. The next one here is JP Morgan embraces Bitcoin collateral.
Yeah.
You know, boss man, mafia don, Jamie Dimon once called Bitcoin a fraud. So why is JP Morgan now willing to lend it against it? Is this a pragmatic turnabout?
Because the rates are higher than traditional collateral lending and I can make more money.
Sure. Well, it also brings more assets under management.
Yeah,
They're rolling out the deal with Coinbase for crypto wallets.
Coinbase is going to custody it. They're going to lend against it. Everybody's doing it. He's got to make more money.
Yeah,
they have about it's like 2% more than what they normally lend.
Do you believe that Jamie's sort of slowly coming around to this for the money, or this has been sort of deliberately slow rolled as more of a plan to just delay?
I mean, you know,
did he always know he was going to come around?
I don't think so. You know, Jamie Dimon, they became the custodian for the gold ETF.
Right. Okay.
GLD, which is giant, right?
Yeah.
And they did that a few years back. So they understood the debasement trade before they publicized the debasement trade. And they wanted to custody the largest sovereign asset in the world. I think they will eventually get there with Bitcoin. But he's not going to walk it. He's not going to walk back his comments and say I was wrong. I don't see him being humble enough to say he's wrong about anything. But at the same time, I don't think he's going to miss an opportunity to make money.
Yeah.
And he's not going to let a division of his an opportunity. Yeah. So they can make more money lending against Bitcoin than they can lending against Apple stock. Let's lend against Bitcoin.
Right. They're going to buy Coinbase probably at some point and turn to strategy and be like, that's a nice business you got there. It'd be a shame if something happened to your coins there, Michael.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's move on to the next one.
Bitcoin's intrinsic.
So much better. I think a lot of people, including recently Christine Lagarde, was saying Bitcoin has no intrinsic value. But the general tale that people tell about the gold intrinsic value is that you can wear it as jewelry. I mean, come on, seriously? underlying scarcity of Bitcoin secured by code is the intrinsic value. This is the only thing that's deflationary by nature. And so I think it's a better version than gold. It's digital. You can move it around. It's way more fungible than gold that you wear as jewelry. And so I think it'll be worth more than gold for sure.
You can wear your Bitcoin. Don't worry.
All right. So I guess the question here is that David said each Bitcoin encodes 1 gigawatt hour of energy into unforgeable digital scarcity. Could this energy as value framing flip the script on critics like Lagarde, or is it just a remix of the old?
No, I don't think it flips the script on Lagarde. I don't think she really is going to draw much from that comment. I don't think she cares what he says. I think generally he's a really smart dude. He'll come up a little bit later when we get into Spark, but I don't really get this comparison here. I don't think that, you know, Bitcoin is like a real literal battery of storing energy. The miners can just turn off the hash rate at any time, and like, it's not sort of a forward-looking commitment. I just don't get the exact analogy. I don't think Lagarde's going to care. I don't think it has intrinsic value because of the electricity already spent.
Well,
or you know,
I slightly disagree with that. Like, I totally agree that Lagarde doesn't give a shit, but I disagree. I do think that the energy consumption used to secure the network adds intrinsic value. Because you can't just create this stuff out of thin air. It's forcing so much work, right? This is
what I think it kind of represents. It's a cost of production.
Yes, it's a cost of production.
But like you can spend a lot of money producing something and it has no value to anyone.
Sure.
And so I don't think it gives it intrinsic value.
This cost of production is a part of the security model, right? Because of the cost,
I think it has to do with security,
attack
yeah.
the network.
Yeah.
So in that regard, I think it adds a lot of value.
I think I see what you're saying. It definitely represents the security level and the how secure your coins are or your sats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's leave it at that. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. We could explore that for hours. So let's move on to the next one here.
So people are rushing to other stores of value that don't rely on a central government. The shiny metal, gold, is one of them. But there's another currency that people are opting for that kind of looks a little bit like gold, at least mentally.
Bitcoin is essentially the new gold.
It's becoming really the true digital gold.
I think a lot of young people are comfortable with digital assets and digital currencies and would switch over to Bitcoin or something different. Either one of those things would provide a check on the Federal Reserve because people would have an alternative and the Fed would know that if they created too much inflation, people would switch over.
Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies may represent a future path for this psychological journey of money that we've seen here, but it seems to be too early.
That was cool.
Yeah, I had no idea who this guy was.
I live in my
little Bitcoin bubble, but
his bubble's bigger than ours.
Yeah, way bigger.
Bigger than Bitcoin's.
And it's just more proof that this discussion around fiat, this discussion around debasement, around inflation is becoming mainstream. Bitcoin has unlocked financial education.
I don't think it's Bitcoin that I think this is inflation.
Really?
Yeah. And I think this is the norm. This is the normalization of the debasement trade, which is a nice way of putting like your money's going to shit.
They've literally gotten society to
buy into like we can make money on inflation.
No, I totally disagree.
You can look at it as a trade.
Bitcoin is the seed.
Bitcoin's
that was planted.
The solution.
What I'm saying is it's unlocked this education.
And he's coming to this through
this
gold.
Discussion.
Gold explained finally. I mean, maybe that's an allusion
but
to
gold,
Bitcoin.
Gold bugs have been saying this shit for how many years?
What I thought was cool is that was
and now
very...
all of a sudden Bitcoin comes on the scene and Bitcoin community just memes it into existence and like gets it in CNBC. gets like Joe Kernan talking about Saifedean's book. Get like we embedded that conversation at the level where it's reaching a YouTube influencer. Like that's telling this story. I mean, I've heard it on so many podcasts. Well, he told it,
I think, in a very modern YouTube sort of like temporal way that people will grok and like like relate to on YouTube in the format that YouTube is. Right. Short video kind of comes across very clear, level-headed.
Even if it's concise. As simple as we just needed the new technology spin in order to get the younger generation on the hard money program. Maybe that's all this is. If it's even that simple, it's good that this message is out there.
Yeah, I don't think people are going to come through it for the hard money. I think it's going to be the debasement trade. I don't think people are going to realize that it's about hard money. They're just going to, it's sort of going to be like the .com trade.
It starts somewhere.
There, you know, but in the .com trade, you know, maybe 10% of 15 people understood the internet. The rest of the people were just chasing alpha. They didn't understand sort of. So I think a lot of people are going to come to Bitcoin and gold right now just to survive.
It's totally different. It's totally different because the .com trade was a technology innovation for companies. The Bitcoin is a technology revolution that fixes money that we all use.
Yeah. Right?
Like this is an immediate shift in.
They're going to be told the same thing about ETH too.
If I'm going to give Wall Street any credit about this, they're not describing ETH as like gold 2.0.
Yeah, but they're pushing out the stable coins. And I think Main Street's still thinking
of ETH as a blockchain technology company.
You know, we talk about Wall Street 2.0. We talk about Bitcoin NSA creation, right?
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, how is ETH not maybe a state creation that was they knew they were going to support the whole time?
I've always thought ETH is Wall Street
in a similar way.
It's Wall Street 2.0. That's what
JP Morgan is behind it. I mean,
DeFi is Wall Street 2.0.
That's what's so weird about Jamie playing dumb is like they invested and seeded and started ETH. It's like, how did that get green lit? Like that, it's crazy. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, they sold all their tech to Consensus.
If you're enjoying the show, please hit like and subscribe. Tune into Bitcoin Center every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. This is Paul, myself, brought to you by Bite Federal. Go bank yourself. Let's move on to the lightning round.
All right, the Fed's Waller embraced the disruption. Fed governor is not only praising crypto innovations, but floating a skinny Fed account for stablecoin firms. Is the U.S. central bank turning crypto friendly at last, or is this just rhetoric as Waller eyes the Fed chair role?
Oh, I don't think this is just rhetoric. I think this is serious. I think this is happening. This is bringing liquidity to the newest companies.
This actually turns stablecoins into an even better CBDC.
Yeah, 100%. Puts it on their rails, gives them a lot more control.
Yeah, and then it's exchangeable with all the other CBDCs in the world.
Yeah. And this Federal Reserve Governor, Christopher Walker, I mean, he kicked off this conference.
Right?
Waller, my bad. He's Walker from now on.
Christopher Walker. Cowbell. We need more cowbell.
So, yeah, Christopher Walken is now on the Federal Reserve Board. And, you know, he said, my view from the Fed from now on is embrace the disruption. Don't avoid it. The Fed intends to be an active part of that revolution. I think the revolution is not happening with the Fed as far as they're concerned, but this is them co-opting the revolution.
Sure.
And he's, you know, one of Trump's potential top candidates to replace Powell. So it could be just talk to kind of, you know, whatever. But he said, I believe we can and should do more to support those actively transforming the payment system. To that end, I have asked Federal Reserve staff to explore the idea I'm calling a payment account. This whole conference was to just really get together people from the Fed and these payment companies in the crypto space.
This goes hand in hand with Luke Gromen's comment a month or so ago when he said, when somebody asked him about like getting stablecoin adoption, and he said, well, just wait to the next major crisis when a foreign government needs a swap line for US dollars. And we say, you're not getting it unless you take it in stablecoins.
Right, no, 100%.
And you got to spend it this way or that way.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say,
like, don't be kidding yourself. Stablecoins are CBDCs. Yeah.
And my man, period. Christopher Walken, said, I wanted to send a message that this is a new era for the Federal Reserve and payments. The DeFi industry is not viewed with suspicion or scorn. He called the new Fed conference an acknowledgement that distributed ledgers and crypto assets are no longer on the fringes, but are increasingly woven into the fabric of the payment and financial system. And this has nothing to do with Bitcoin, mm-mm, in my opinion. Mm-mm. And I hope Bitcoin has very little or nothing to do with DeFi for a long time. We could talk about that maybe, but yeah, let's move on to the next one. But this is going fast. All right, so GBDC discount vanishes. I have no idea they're still around. No, Grayscale's GBDC trust, once at a 50% discount, is now trading essentially at parity, and 0% discount. So our trader, I guess that's a 1M NAV. Are traders that confident spot ETF approval is imminent, or is there arbitrage risk if the SEC?
GBTC traded like a closed end mutual fund.
Right.
So, you know, traders are going to arbitrage the premiums or the, discount away. And that's what we've seen with GBTC. I guess there is, you know, rumors or there's potential. The SEC is going to give them the ability to convert GBTC into an ETF. You know, I think that I don't see why it's taken so long. But I guess, you know, Gensler wanted to punish them for since they decided to sue the SEC. And so now maybe with when the SEC wakes up from their government shutdown, maybe they will give GBTC ETF and then this won't be an issue anymore. But I still don't think the premiums or discounts are going to get that big because traders will just get rid of it.
Right.
So. All right. It's kind of a nothing burger, but good to see that the 50% discount is gone.
Yeah, I wonder how Barry Shilbert's doing.
All right, I think certainly, it's fair to say that right now gold is winning the debasement trade. But I think there's the NFK, and there are lots of market people out there who have talked about how Bitcoin trails gold and whatever, and probably true. But I think it's as important that when we say the debasement trade, it's really there's an important geopolitical angle to it, right? Like the Chinese in around the mid 2000 teens decided they were going to start stockpiling gold. China has a GDP to all, you know, private debt ratio of like 390%, something like that. Huge. They've injected $1 trillion worth of yuan into their economy this year. They are debasing the yuan against gold with the objective of creating a sort of gold-based, not gold-backed, but gold-based financial system. And right now we're in, you know, and you, when you have central banks buying gold, the express purpose of retooling the global financial system and creating new rails, this is what's going to happen. I think Bitcoin's going to catch up. There's lots of, Bitcoin is trade 24/7, gold is not trade 24/7. There's lots of reasons why Bitcoin is a lot more volatile, and there's been a lot of talk in DC lately about, you know, does Bitcoin's volatility prevent it from achieving its, you know, achieving the objective of becoming global collateral. Maybe, and I'll leave that to Zach or Steven to address. I have my own opinions about that. But I think it's important to remember what's actually going on here. I mean, yes, gold right now is winning the debasement trade, but you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint. There's a very disciplined effort in Beijing to make this happen for reasons that make perfect sense if you're a Chinese policymaker. I don't really fret too much the price action of Bitcoin over the past week. For all kinds of reasons, and again, I also don't think the price of gold is infinite, because again, gold, like a lot of other assets, is manipulated. It can be repressed. It can be inflated. Right now, it's being inflated, but there's a limit to even an economy the size of China and all their stimulus, how much they can inflate.
So, is he suggesting that China is helping suppress the Bitcoin market while pumping the gold market to compete on different monetary outcomes?
Not sure what he was suggesting in terms of that. I mean, what do you think China is doing here? Do you think China is just trying to acquire gold?
It's been very clear, right? China needs to build a middle class to offset a future multipolar world where the U.S. becomes less of a customer.
Right.
So they started saying in 2014... we're going to buy less treasuries. We're going to let them roll off our balance sheet. We're going to tell our citizens to start buying gold. They were very public about getting their citizens to invest in gold. And then they've been instead of buying treasuries, buying gold for their balance sheet. So they are driving the value of gold up to create wealth within inside their own country. At the same time, right, there's now an opportunity when we sanctioned Russia, there's now this opportunity to go to the rest of the Belt and Road players and say, hey, the U.S. could take your treasuries at any time. Why don't we start settling trade in gold? We'll trade our currencies. Any surpluses can be settled in gold. We'll set up a gold exchange in Hong Kong. We'll set up a gold exchange in Saudi Arabia. We'll set up a gold exchange in your country. We'll have the vaults in your country, so you don't have to worry about us confiscating your gold like the U.S. did, right? So they're using this very smartly against us to set up a multipolar world that can settle in gold.
Gold-based.
This is what we say. Yeah,
not gold-backed. Yeah, I get
gold
it.
Gold-settled.
Gold-based, yeah.
Okay, gold. I call it gold-settled.
But are they just missing the whole
Bitcoin thing? No. Bitcoin is $2 trillion. Gold's over $20 trillion asset
trillion.
Now. $30 trillion. So there's...
Bitcoin is not big enough.
It's not big enough to settle global trade.
Are they just going to ignore it?
I doubt it.
So the mining going on in Bitcoin, the mining going on in China. Do you think that is rogue miners or is that the state acquiring some Bitcoin?
I have no proof of any of it. I would suspect that the state is involved.
And what happens if the United States government dumps a bunch of gold tomorrow? China, what if the United States government sold all the gold tomorrow, crashing the price?
That's not going to happen.
What is the threat to then China long term? Maybe the way
the threat to China.
Well, in terms of like some societies didn't adopt gold fast enough.
Okay,
and it set them back. Let's say they went with silver.
Okay,
right, and that set them back maybe 100 or 200 years.
Sure.
Could that happen with Bitcoin?
I think that's the play, right? I think
Is China not aware of that?
No, I think they are aware of it, but they have this other risk,
right?
That they have a closed capital structure, and capital flight is very dangerous for them. And Bitcoin just is like the best capital flight instrument ever created, right? So they're going to sit there and say, they're going to promote gold ownership. They're going to promote gold investment because they've done everything to outlaw Bitcoin mining, Bitcoin trading, Bitcoin custody over the years because they want this closed capital structure. That's why we as Bitcoiners keep saying the best thing we can do is embrace this new freedom tech, this sovereign money, and give it to the world and have most of it here in the United States. So I think we're going to let them drive the value of gold up. We're going to mark to market our gold, fill up the TGA, and then we're going to slam Bitcoin. And then we're going to regain our dominance on a Bitcoin standard. We'll have a multipolar world, some of the world working on gold, some of the world working on digital gold, and that's how trade is going to be settled in the future. But there's no reason for us to like blow that out of the bag right now. Let's let them monetize the gold with their liquidity, and then we'll mark to market when it's $10,000 an ounce. And then, and in the meantime, we're confiscating Bitcoin and doing all this, and then we'll elevate the price of Bitcoin. And who holds most Bitcoin in the world? The United States.
Right. The United States has what, like 4% of the gold? I wonder how much China has at this point. Like, is it 2%?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. But I would hope that's the game plan.
What is that? Like 2 to 3 trillion on the balance? The markup would be?
I think
we were trying to figure that out.
We were trying to figure that out.
And the quote we heard was around a trillion at today's prices. I think they marked it up 100x.
Today's price is about a trillion.
About 250x or something like that.
2.5 trillion, yeah.
Something like that. All right, let's move on to the next one here. HODLer profit taking hits record levels. Long-term HODLers unloaded 337,000 Bitcoin in the past 30 days.
Mm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest monthly sell-off by diamond hands in recent memory. Is this merely prudent profit taking after new highs or a harbinger that even believers see trouble ahead?
I don't think it's
about trouble ahead.
So here's the deal. I did a little bit of research on this. In 2017...
Thank God someone did.
In 2017... during that cycle, there were 3.93 million long-term Bitcoin sold. And they're defining long-term by 6 month to 1 year old.
In 2013, 3 million long-term Bitcoin was sold. That's not long-term.
HODLers, 6 months to 1 year. No. So take that with a grain of salt. but 3.93 million supposedly sold in 2017. 3 million supposedly sold in 2021 peak. And currently we're sitting at 3.27 million. So very, very comparable numbers, all coinciding with the four-year cycle.
Yep. And people sort of leveling up in their but lives and diversifying. I would say
like just looking at this most recent flush of this down flush in the market and how little Bitcoin responded to that, I don't think that was a big drop. Like, I mean, in past four-year cycle tops, the first big move down was they were always like close to 50%. I mean, they were violent downdrafts, 50% down and 50% or more recoveries, right? So for Bitcoin to be down 10, 15% on that big of a flush was not like a big deal.
Right.
And it's not coming on like massive bullish speculation. It's coming in the midst of a one-year consolidation. There's still
a lot of speculation in the system, I think.
There's a lot of speculative rhetoric. There's not a lot of speculation. There's not a lot of...
I think every time we go through one of those...
in the price chart, right?
There's not...
You don't hear people saying like, oh my God, Bitcoin's going up forever.
Right. But like, I have a feeling a lot of people are going levered long when they feel like the tide is
The top will be in? The top in this market's going to be in when we hear everybody saying, oh, the four-year cycle's dead. It's going to a million. It's going to go to wherever it's going. That we're just going straight to the next bull market. There's no more four-year cycle. As soon as everybody believes there's no more four-year cycle, then this bull run will be dead. But right now we've got this drag of everybody still thinks the four-year cycle is real. We're going to sell just in case. Long-term hodlers are selling, taking profit. If you've made billions of dollars,
all right,
I'd probably sell some too, right?
Yeah, no, I hear you. All right, let's move on here.
All right. The real world test, 8.9% yield on Lightning. So a recent public Lightning Network node experiment earned 8.9% annualized yield over 60 days. Is this evidence that Bitcoin's layer two can generate substantial yield and maybe
not for me.
The yield curve?
No, this still seems very experimental to me in terms of like, you know, this is done over 60 days. They're still trying to like widen the network. 8.9%. I'm not sold that that's going to be around the rate they'll generate. I think they have to come in around 9, 10, 11%, or this is just not going to be that appetizing to, you know, sort of people who want to, you know, hold liquidity or capital somewhere. So I'm not sold yet. I love that they're doing this and that they're a public company and it seems like they're trying to do it the right way and they have like a real Bitcoin business. I just don't know if it's scalable yet.
I don't know the details about this test.
And they did this with about 500 Bitcoin. That's how they scaled it. They scaled it up to about 497 Bitcoin, I believe, which is on their balance sheet.
That's what I was going to say. In order to do this kind of stuff, you have to be a giant node.
Yeah. So they're trying to be one of these giant nodes. Yeah. They got up to 500 Bitcoin. It's from their own balance sheet.
Which to me...
So then they generate a little yield on their holdings. It's all there, the flywheel.
Right. But to me, that sort of breaks the purpose of Lightning. Right? We wanted massive decentralization.
Yeah, I don't think that's the way Lightning's going.
Everybody running the nodes.
Lightning's going the way of sort of custodial and...
Giant nodes, right?
Yeah.
And those giant nodes are going to be controlled by large institutions. And maybe this will be
sort of, you know, whatever back office for Visa, right? I think we're going to need a level three, a level four, a layer five.
No, I think you're right. Like maybe Visa adopts Lightning and runs giant nodes and makes transactions for us free.
And I think it's even going to be a layer on top of Lightning.
Near free because they're earning this 4 or 5% yield.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's going to be even a layer on top of Lightning that Visa evolving. Would adopt. It's still, Let's move on to the next one here. Bitcoin, 30% undervalued versus tech stocks. One analysis claims Bitcoin is trading at a 30% discount relative to its fair value versus the NASDAQ. Does this imply Bitcoin's rally still has headroom if viewed as a tech asset? Or is comparing apples to oranges completely misleading?
I just thought this whole question was kind of silly because it's like half the time you hear people say the problem with Bitcoin is it's correlated to tech assets. Then the other half of the time they're saying if Bitcoin uncorrelates with tech assets, then it would really prove itself as a store of value and an asset that deserves to be in a portfolio. So would like the only reason people are bitching or saying it's undervalued is because it's all of a sudden it's not correlating with tech stocks, right? And it's not correlating with the S&P. But there should be a whole nother half of the population that thinks that's an amazing thing. And now this asset deserves to be in every portfolio. So I think it misses the whole point. The very fact that Bitcoin can uncorrelate with tech stocks, I think, adds value to the adoption of this asset over the long run, right? So to me, it's not a disappointing thing. It's not,
I do think it's undervalued.
If tech stocks fall apart and it correlates on the downside, then, you know, we'll be upset.
I mean, this is, an analyst is just trying to figure out where the correlations and trends and patterns are and what conclusions they could draw from a limited sample size.
And that's been a very prominent theme.
Everyone's grasping at straws, trying to figure out how to look at this thing, how to value it, how to value it at a moment in time, how to place a bet.
For my perspective, right, you are seeing a lot of selling with not a lot of downside.
We just don't know. No matter what anyone's plans are, the government's included, we don't know what kind of black swan events could just come out of nowhere at any time, short term or long term.
But there's nothing I've seen that if Bitcoin dropped,
that's when they usually come out.
If Bitcoin
though,
dropped to $70,000-$40,000 a coin, I'd be like, what can I sell?
You're buying. You would feel richer in purchasing power in a lot of ways.
Oh my God,
sort of fiat that you make in the real world.
Yeah,
it's worth more now.
You could get two Bitcoin for the price of one. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's move on.
And what I just did through that, and by the way, what I would ask you to do is keep coming back to that statement: the natural state of the free market is deflation. Don't just say it; internalize it. Internalize it so it's true for you, because it is true. In that world, prices fall to the marginal cost of production. And it keeps happening. It goes, and that happens forever. So what does that set up in our brains? It sets up a cognitive dissonance. And the first part is a mental discomfort in our brains by holding two true statements that we can't align. They're opposites. And the second thing, and what most Bitcoiners will tell you in this, is as they spend more time in Bitcoin, the other thing that happens, and I'm going to share with you how it happened to me too, is the discomfort you feel when your actions don't align to your values. That's the second thing that happens. And so worse than this, we've never lived in a system, a natural state, a free market. We've never lived in that. Worse than our own brains trying to understand that complication is this. It's happening at a faster and faster rate, because exponential productivity gains, artificial intelligence, is exponential productivity gains. Exponential productivity gains means everything should be cheaper at a faster and faster rate forever. And that should be the natural course as we compete to provide more value. And we should all be living in that abundant system. And it should be getting easier and easier for 8 billion people on the planet every day, because that's how we compete. And it's wild that we use the technology that produces artificial intelligence, and we ourselves will use it, and then wonder why prices are falling and the system looks so bad. Because we live in a system, because it's a credit-based system that can't allow that to happen, that must extract all of those gains and centralize them and make them stronger and stronger and stronger, with very few people controlling all of the technology, all of the broad-based abundance that should flow to you. It's wild. It's wild that smart people can say AI and robotics is going to replace all jobs. And by the way, AI and robotics is the worst it'll ever be right now. It's moving so fast. And but smart people can say AI and robotics replace all jobs, but we should keep printing money. So people, when they lose their jobs, prices should rise and they won't know what to do. It's ludicrous. The The idea of productivity is to save our time, if we would allow.
So Jeff's been preaching this for years now. Is this message not sinking in? Is it flying under the radar for most people, or are they?
Yeah, I think it's totally.
Why are people not grokking this?
I think because they're uncomfortable. To what he was saying. I mean, like, it's really like painful to have these two ideas in your head and live in a paradox. I think it's just draining. I think
people have a hard time realizing that there's what's good for humanity and then there's what's good for government.
Well, right? I think a lot of people think government is humanity.
Yeah,
now,
it's you not. Know,
and it, that it's
I'm, sort I of, have a
it's the creator of money. Y'all. It's the creator of money.
It's your problem.
Which is a god sort of like property,
right?
Or so, a god-like ability to create money.
Yes,
and
which steals humanity's
which gives
wealth and productivity.
Anybody who has the money printer becomes they have the moral imperative to solve all problems now.
Yeah,
because they have the ring.
That's so
all the people are like, hey, you don't can believe solve
that,
the problems.
Though. You don't believe that. You just say no, but that's
I did believe that for a long time. Yeah. It's like you're in a government world. You're right. Just, and they control everything. You don't think about it that way, but you're like,
I guess
outside of my purview, we got to right. go to them it's to like, figure
it's,
this out.
It's like entering the matrix and going like, whoa, right? So it is the Bitcoin matrix. And this is, I think, once people grok this, they do have a hard time understanding. But what I don't get is why they don't all of a sudden realize that the government and the Federal Reserve is the problem. Because if you removed them from the situation,
well,
if you removed money from the state,
had an interesting conversation with Dan White. And, you know, I think the history of money is still not fully understood.
For sure.
And to say that the Federal Reserve is the problem, it doesn't acknowledge that the Federal Reserve was solving some problems of private money and all the banking issues prior to 1913.
Okay, so...
I wasn't around then, but it wasn't like things were just all copacetic
They
weren't booms and busts. There wasn't all this, like... Different
but
money flowing around.
The bus didn't impoverish the entire world.
No, I get it. I think it's been a bad, bad thing. But it,
people
I think it came
that
about.
Were participating with those bad banks.
Right. But, right? I think a lot of people might correctly assume, hey, it would be worse without this thing.
No, this is
pre Bitcoin.
But this is the nature of humanity that creates so many long term problems. This idea of I am hurt, somebody needs to help me. That has created so many chronic problems in civilization forever. As opposed to, I screwed up. I need to bail myself.
Yeah, well, there's no personal responsibility taught in America, in the culture, and anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So this is what the Federal Reserve played on or preyed on.
Sure.
This like somebody help me attitude that so many people in our world want to embrace.
Yeah.
And this creates
because they have the money printer.
Longer term. Yeah, but they don't
so
have
So it's like
a,
people go to them like mommy and daddy.
That's a bad thing. They don't have a money printer. We gave them the
authority. They literally separated family and said, hey, look, we'll give Social Security.
Yes.
So the family doesn't have to care.
Yes.
You know, we're the family now. We're the source of love, creation, and all things godlike.
Yes.
So come to us with your problems.
Come to us
with your injustice.
There's lots of control structures that have been set up in society to fill that role. And that is a big problem because people do not take their own sovereignty in their own hands.
People don't want to be sovereign.
Feed yourself, make your own money, store your own money, be your own bank.
Dude, Jeff is a godsend. And Jeff,
yes. What is that?
Yeah, he moved to Florida. He had a, you know,
boat with his
feet a little bit. Yeah
buddy. He's welcome
renting
to Florida,
down
Jeff.
In Miami.
Welcome to Florida.
Yeah, I hope I didn't dox him there. All right, let's move on. All right.
Spark and Arc. Redefine Bitcoin's layer 2 landscape. As Spark and Arc emerge with radically different trust and privacy trade-offs to extend Lightning's reach, are we witnessing the birth of a new pragmatic era in Bitcoin scalability? Or the quiet normalization of semi-custodial networks under the banner of layer 2.
No, I think this is incremental, pragmatic experimentation, trying to find small benefits and risks and trade-offs, just trying to figure out the trade-offs that Lightning hasn't solved.
Yeah.
I don't think Lightning is the, you know, sort of the end-all be-all for the end user or the retail user or the common person to interact with the on-chain final settlement.
Yeah.
So I think these things are going to be built on top of Lightning. But, you know, the way these things are, I don't think that they're, like, anywhere near end state themselves or guaranteed.
I think they're moving in a good direction because, from working in the space and working with Lightning, watching what happened to Samurai, I started to understand Lightning as a risk from a regulatory perspective, yeah, because you're custodying people's coins. You're running a node on their behalf. And when you have custody, you're taking on a responsibility that requires licensing, right, and regulation. It's a whole nother ballgame. So to the extent that they can build layer twos that work like Lightning, but are peer-to-peer without people having to rely on somebody running their node, I'm all for it. And I think it's great innovation because at the end of the day, right, that merchant, that retailer wants to just get the Bitcoin. They just want to get paid. They want to get paid cheaper, faster, with no settlement risk. Yeah. And Lightning can deliver that, but it can't deliver that in a fashion that the regulators will allow.
Yeah, we got to run through this. I'll just, Seth for Privacy just put out a piece in Bitcoin Magazine, taking a look at these two systems. We definitely need, more layer twos or new layer twos, or maybe this is three and four, you know. Arc kind of came out of, concept of Arc was created in May of 2023. But there's still trust trade-offs. There's lack of, sort of finality or sort of like, figuring out this VTXOs that expire. It's complex sort of user experience still. There's privacy trade-offs, transaction visibility issues. There's progress here. And then, looking at Spark, was launched by the folks at LightSpark, who they have an interesting history. They came out of the failed Libra sort of currency, or they're affiliated with that. They have connections to that. They've done something like UMA, which is a username system with natively integrated compliance features for their banking partners. So that doesn't sound so great, but this seems to kind of be more aligned with Bitcoin ethos. And they're kind of taking some of the state chains, and they're trying to move that forward and build on that. But again, this sort of like has, maybe some trust trade-offs, lack of true finality, potentially centralized token control, and some privacy trade-offs. We'll see where this goes. It's exciting.
Yeah, no, I think there's going to be some good things that emerge from this.
All right, let's move on to the next one here. Shinobi warns, save our wallets before it's too late. As U.S. prosecutors target developers of open-source non-custodial wallets, Bitcoiners are rallying behind the Satoshi Needs You campaign to secure explicit legal protections. Does this mark the beginning of a new civil rights battle for digital self-sovereignty, or the last stand before code itself becomes criminalized?
Hopefully we don't have to get, this doesn't become an end-all be-all. They're trying to get this into the, what do they call it? The, what's that new crypto law they're working on? The crypto law.
Clarity
Act, the Anti-Clarity Act.
They need that to go through.
Because if they're going after self-custody, like they did with Samurai and these Lightning nodes, and what they did with Tornado Cash, if they're going after these developers to squash privacy and self-custody, that really is like the first nail in the coffin. For that, to me, is more dangerous than what's happening with IBIT. I'm hopeful. I have sent my letters to our senators here in Florida, both Republican and Democrat, to let them know what I think. I think this is very important for everybody in our space to support. They make it super easy. Go to the website, download the letter, email it. They give you the phone numbers. Call your senators. Let them know that you care about this stuff. And self-custody is super important. If we lose that, we have lost Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. This is the first digital bearer asset ever in humanity, and they will take it away if we don't fight for it. And so you have to fight for your ability to hold it yourself.
Yeah, I agree. Word. All right, man, let's go to the last one here.
I mean, let's say that Peter and I are bad actors.
Sure.
Let's say that we are. What are you going to do about it? That's why we are here. How are you going to stop us?
I thought this also had to do with Binance founder CZ agreeing to debate Peter Schiff with Bitcoin versus gold. I think all these guys are, I don't know. That didn't sound, I don't know. I don't like them really kind of, what did you think of that quote from Jameson?
I don't understand the clip. I don't understand what the hell they were talking about there.
So they're saying like that clip is related to Knott's versus Core. And they're saying like, hey, if we're bad actors, not like literally like Jameson saying me,
okay,
like himself, but like, hypothetically, bad actors, like if they're going to do this and you can't stop them 100%, like that's it. Like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do about it? Like, we could just do it. But it seemed like,
I mean,
it seemed like that clip makes it seem like he's intimating, like he's trying to think through how to be a bad actor, you know,
I'm guessing what he was trying to say is there are always bad actors. We've had many bad actors in the Bitcoin space in the past. And even if he's not saying he is, but even if he was or somebody else was, you can't stop it. It's the protocol itself that's this trust model that as long as we maintain the protocol and we maintain the consensus that bad actors can come and go, they can do a little bit of damage, but they're going to get flushed out.
Right.
They always have. So I'm hopeful that's what he was getting at. If this is related to the Core and Knott's debate, I'm still like, I mean, first of all, thank you, Tone Vase and Jimmy Song, for your lecture series or interview series.
Yeah. I mean, Jimmy had, Tone Vase had Jimmy and Bob Burnett on today.
Yeah. I watched that today. And the other two episodes, I think that they've done and more coming. I mean, we need guys like that to come in to this discussion because I think they're educating a lot of people. If you haven't watched it, go watch it. These guys were around for in the Bitcoin community for the first user-activated soft fork, the block wars. They're taking this on again to try and make sure people really understand what's going on. I think it's super important. I'm not, you know, sold on either. The more I learn about the discussion, the more I see both sides, and the more I think that maybe the whole discussion about the CSAM debate is like an emotional wrapper on a core technical issue that most of us probably aren't capable of really comprehending. So it at the end of the day, if there are there's a way for this whole community to come together and solve this or come to a settlement on an agreement or simply we have multiple clients running, then that is better than us trying to experiment with like a fight that leads to a hard fork. That is going to be a horrible experience for anybody who's new to this system. And yeah. I don't think anybody benefits from it. So, you know, I don't know that his comment was directly associated with calling himself a bad actor because he supports Core. And what are you going to do about it? I don't know if he's trying to call people out like that or not, but maybe he was. I mean, Bitcoin's a decentralized protocol that's uncensorable. You can do what the hell you want.
Yeah, but I think we know what monetary transactions are.
Yeah,
and
we
I think that we shouldn't have faith that bad actors are going to not act badly when we try to steer them in the place we want them to misbehave. I'm not sure. And I just don't know why we had to go from op return at 83 kilobytes to 10,000 or like
We didn't have to do
and
that.
Especially, and some people have argued that this has been something Core has been thinking about for a decade. It's not a rush, but like the community flipped out and they were just like,
well, look,
we don't
if there's
you.
A good technical argument, Core is not doing a good job of explaining it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well,
and if there, but also, the CSAM, I mean, that really triggered me initially. But now I'm starting to understand that that's probably not as big of a threat as I once thought it was to node operators. Miners are certainly not incentivized. Big publicly traded miners are certainly not incentivized to mine that stuff. So they're leery about it as well. So, you know, there's a lot. This is a lot more nuanced and complicated than I think the surface level argument that's happening on X reflects.
Yeah. Just to maybe clarify on the clip. So Michael Dunworth wrote, Casa, come get your boy. But then Kyle Torpe was like, this was in response to Luke calling him and Peter bad actors or something like that, by the way. He didn't just say it out of nowhere. It makes more sense in that context. And then Michael's like, thanks for clarifying. That makes help. That makes heaps more sense. Everything is starting to feel clickbaity, paparazzi on the timeline. Do you get the same sort of stuff? Yeah. It's getting a little wild out there. But I think this speaks to that we need a new governance model. I don't think we have one in place that's going to work for an asset this size. And I think that I think we're moving past the ability of humans to augment, tinker, adjust.
I think like Bob,
this code.
Bob said it really good today with Tone and Jimmy when he said, you know, when he started it, I think at Gateway, it was kind of like they were developers and they were doing whatever hell they wanted. And they were doing stuff they thought was great. And then as they got bigger and they became publicly traded and they became this giant company and they had users that were like, well, don't take that away. No, don't change this. And then you begin to, it becomes much more different. Complicated. Yeah. And there's a lot more social and corporate implications to making technical changes. And so, you know.
Well, Jim, it sounds like on Bitcoin Audible chat, Jimmy Song and Guy Swan were talking about it. And Jimmy sounds like he's really for ossification. That a lot of these developers want to, you know, have new tools, new things to play with, more DeFi, more of this bullshit. And like, we kind of know that this is really good money. It's a fantastic store of value. It's people's life force. And I think we're moving past the ability of one human
to tinker
and adjust this code.
Gold has been ossified for how long? Forever.
Right.
And gold is the best money we've had for
And ossification could mean for a few years until people come up with something that is really thought out needed. Let's make what we have better. Let's bring privacy and security to what we already have.
Right. Awesome. It's not ossification to demise. It's ossification unless there's a critical issue that needs to be solved. And then what does the governance model look like to make those decisions? And I think Bob is kind of thinking about that, and others need to. And if anything good comes out of this debate, it's that we will figure out a better way to coordinate what needs to be changed and why.
Yeah.
As opposed to just changing something that doesn't need to be fixed.
Last one. Well, we got on top right here. Schiffer, Zhao, two guys who know very little about Bitcoin or are not real supporters. CZ, I think, actually knows what he's talking about. They should invite Brian Armstrong to this. There could be a bunch of three clowns kind of selling shit coins and arguing against Bitcoin. You know, I want to read one more thing that's really interesting. So Zelle, the bank-owned money transfer app used by more than 100 million U.S. customers for instant domestic payments, says it plans to enable international transfers using stablecoins. The service will be available to any bank in the Zelle network. So then Sitebringer, I don't know if this is AI or not, but this is a monumental development, but it's being quietly presented, almost too quietly, which is exactly why it matters. Here's the unfiltered truth. This marks the covert merger of the U.S. banking system and crypto rails. Zelle is not just another fintech app. It's the clearing interface for over 1,800 U.S. banks, collectively managing trillions in retail flow. When that network integrates stablecoins for international transfers, what's really happening is of the U.S. dollar settlement layer, the plumbing beneath the financial system. Stablecoins are no longer the crypto toy of the retail class. They're becoming the rails for the next SWIFT, but bank-controlled, KYC'd, and fully reflexive to U.S. policy. Number two, this is the soft launch of CBDC without the C. No official central bank digital currency. No problem. What we're seeing is a proxy CBDC system emerging from the private sector under regulatory blessing. The U.S. avoided launching a CBDC directly because that would have triggered political backlash, privacy outrage, and state-level resistance. Instead, they're federalizing stablecoins through commercial banking conduits like Zelle, using existing consumer trust infrastructure. The result? Full programmability and traceability of transactions, dollar hegemony extended into digital form, plausible deniability. It's not a CBDC, it's innovation. This is the reverse Trojan horse of monetary control, a private sector rollout masking as convenience. Number three, reflexive implications for Bitcoin. Here's the paradox. This accelerates Bitcoin adoption, not hinders it. Because as fiat transitions into digital form, the belief structure of money itself becomes transparent. When your Zelle balance is a programmable token, the difference between stablecoin and crypto collapses. The mental firewall separating traditional finance from the digital asset realm disintegrates. Reflexively, that triggers a belief migration. The realization that money is now code, and if all money is code, the purest form of code money wins. That's Bitcoin. Every user sends a cross-border Zelle transfer using a regulated stablecoin is now functionally interacting with a blockchain. And every interaction is a microdose of awareness, a subconscious onboarding into the post-fiat paradigm. Four, global liquidity implication. Stablecoin rails compress friction and bypass traditional correspondent banking bottlenecks. That means velocity of dollar liquidity increases. More flow, less drag. Ironically, this inflates global USD liquidity even as the Fed maintains its tightening stance on paper. It's stealth monetary expansion through technological rails, what you should call shadow QE via blockchain infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And every liquidity expansion, however disguised, reflexively fuels hard collateral assets. That's the bridge. Zelle stablecoins to US dollar digitization to a hidden liquidity expansion to Bitcoin ignition. The real meta play. Don't miss this. This rollout isn't just about payments. It's geopolitical containment. The U.S. is watching China's digital yuan encroach on emerging market corridors. And rather than fight it head on, it's co-opting the terrain. By turning Zelle into a regulated global stablecoin network, the U.S. quietly reasserts dollar dominance in digital form. It's the same strategy the British Empire used with telegraphy and naval routes. Control the rails and you control the narratives of value transmission. Zelle's expansion marks the monetary mirror moment where old world banking and digital finance finally fuse. It's the birth of the hybrid layer, the point where sovereignty, liquidity, and code converge into one reflexive field. The Zelle news is the quiet trigger point, the invisible ignition, the day the banks began to run on chain and pretend they didn't. Kind of interesting.
That was awesome. I think it goes beyond Zelle. It's PayPal.
Yep.
It's Venmo.
Yep.
It's Visa. It's MasterCard. It's American Express, right? They're all going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think totally accurate and just expand it. And then I got bad news for everybody who's holding a bag of Ripple. It ain't Ripple. It's all of those guys running stable coins. So... and then at the end of the day, right, what does that mean? It's Russia pointed this out as the threat, right? Russia called us out on this stablecoin game because they know it is the threat by which we're going to offshore inflation and liquidity into all of their citizens all over the world. So this is the game. Bitcoin's going to be the pristine collateral in that new infrastructure, in that new dollar liquidity rail system. So it's no longer going to be treasuries. Treasuries are going to die a slow death. It's going to be Bitcoin and stable coins. Prepare accordingly. Bank yourself, get your Bitcoin, hold it in self-custody, and get ready for the future. It's coming.
Yeah, please hit like and subscribe. Turn on your notifications. Join us every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Francis, I don't know if we have any questions or any Q&A or comments, but this is Bitcoin. By Byte Federal, go bank yourself.
Seth for privacy is a Monero advocate.
Good for him.
Yes.
He's trying to figure things out.
No, I mean, Monero was awesome. Monero was a great privacy coin. it's just too small of a network now, and it can be broken.
He's breaking down the pros and cons of layer twos on Bitcoin. I love
the privacy, and hopefully we can get more privacy into Bitcoin.
Yeah, hopefully Bitcoin can learn from Monero on that front. Yeah. I don't think Monero is going to work out, but I'd love to chat with Seth for privacy about specifically these kinds of things. What he likes about Monero, maybe even we could learn from that. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think we should be so closed-minded. But no, thanks for commenting.
That's it.
All right.
Thanks, Seth.
Let's roll out. This is Bitcoin Center brought to you by Byte Federal. Go bank yourself, point of sale, crypto wallet, and Bitcoin ATMs. Buy that Bitcoin. Peace.